Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.
Now for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome on this beautiful Tuesday morning, Michael. The humidity is down, not a cloud in the sky. It is Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel, brought to you by Stockton Mortgage. You find your dream home, let Stockton do the rest at Stockton.com.
Well, you've got that down pat. That's a good one. That's a good
Didn't
one.
Didn't even read it.
I know. You just looked at me, and I mean, it was like memory care.
How are you this morning?
Good, good. I love the day today, don't you? Love the day, and the weather's perfect. It really is perfect.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
If you want to go to the track, you want to play tennis or golf or whatever you want to do, take a walk.
Perfect
day. The weather's
day.
Perfect, yeah.
Except you can't go to the track today because the track isn't open.
No, but Twin Spires has gotten something.
But Michael, I'm very excited. Probably the most famous horse racing meeting in the world started this morning. Royal Ascot. And it's steeped in tradition. One of the biggest bets every day is what color dress the queen is going to wear when she rides in her carriage. So, and it's always been an important meeting, but even more so the last 8 or 10 years. Wesley Ward, of course, a very successful trainer here, has started taking 8 or 10 horses over there and been somewhat successful racing in England. And so that's a great meeting, a great tradition, great pageantry. It's I think NBC Sports Channel is carrying it all. It only goes 5 days from Tuesday through
They're
Saturday.
Carrying the whole thing?
Yeah.
Wow.
From beginning. Well, at least they do things differently. They put their big races early in the card. For instance, today at Royal Ascot, first race is a Group One. First race of the meet is a Group One. They have three Group Ones and a Group Two. And then the last three races are lesser races. So I know that they're carrying all of the stake races for the next 5 days. But it's fun.
Can we bet those on Twin Spires?
You better believe
it. Or FanDuel, either one?
You better believe. I don't know about FanDuel. I don't have a FanDuel.
Well, we live on this side of the bridge. But you can drive on the other side, park your car, and make your bet.
Yeah, I would think so. But I know you can play them on Twin Spires and TVG and all those accounts.
And those pop up automatically on your television. The minute you open the screen, there they are, right?
Yep.
How about our man Brad Cox?
Yeah, we didn't talk about that yesterday, but Manaloon won the Pegasus. Not a lot of big races over the weekend. That was probably the biggest one, and didn't have a very good trip. Look at that.
He's got it on, doesn't he? Royal Ascot. Yes,
Royal Ascot. Good job, Jack. Good job. This is a first race.
What I like when I've been watching this previously, they'll walk around a crowd. A guy will make a bet. It's almost like a bookie.
They have on track bookies.
That's what I mean. Yeah, a guy walks around and takes the bet.
And they have and they have boards where they'll in chalk they'll write the odds, and if they're they'll change the odds right there. But the difference in betting with a bookie and betting paramutually is, you know, the odds continue to change. You can bet on a 10-to-1 shot, and if when the race goes off, if that horse is 5-to-1, you get 5-to-1. When you bet with a bookie,
you get the number.
You bet a 10-to-1, you've got 10-to-1, and so
what's the juice on that?
I have no idea, but they're not doing it for free.
Oh, absolutely not.
I can guarantee.
No,
you
that's
that.
Why I ask. Yeah, there had to be some juice in there someplace.
But going back, Mandaloon didn't have a very good trip. He got squeezed at the beginning, went back to dead last, and of course he made a nice run. Got a little. You know that Monmouth has banned whips.
I did not know that.
Jockeys cannot. They can carry a whip, and they can use it if. What did they say? For safety reasons, but you can't whip the horse. And the Jockey Guild today announced they are no longer going to insure jockeys at Monmouth Park. Because they think not carrying a whip is
dangerous.
Yeah, and so they won't insure, which means the jockeys will quit riding. So we'll see where all of this plays out. The jockeys can't ride without insurance, and if they went and tried to get it for themselves, it'd be way expensive. And so I think what the Jockeys Guild is trying to do is to force Monmouth to change that rule. But anyway, Mandaloon got to the lead and started looking around, and of course, Florent Giroux didn't have a whip, so he couldn't get him to get going, and it was pretty close at the end.
But yeah, it was. But I watched the replay.
But he won. That'll be a nice step to the Haskell.
That's where Brad said he's going next.
Yeah. So congratulations to Brad, and of course the lawsuits just keep on coming for Mr. Baffert. He sued the New York Racing Association for lack of due process. According to his lawsuit, he has done nothing wrong in the state of New York or the rules of racing, and he has a license. And so it'll be interesting to see where that all goes. But as we said, we're going to be reading about Bob Baffert lawsuits for the next year.
No question. I mean, if New York goes, does Jersey go? Does Jersey follow
New
York?
Well, Jersey already said he could run.
Oh, did they?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Jersey said, the state of New Jersey said, I'm sure, anticipating a lawsuit like this, California and New Jersey have come out. And remember, here in New York, it's the New York Racing Association that has banned Baffert. He can't run at Belmont, Aqueduct, Finger Lakes, Saratoga, and he can't run in the state of New York. Here in Kentucky, he hasn't been banned by the Kentucky Racing Association. He's been banned by Churchill. So that means he can't run at Churchill or Turfway Park. But Keeneland hasn't taken a position yet. Ellis Park, that opens the end of the month, hasn't taken a position. So two different cases. One, it's the New York Racing Association. Here, it's the racetrack.
Well, the Haskell, I mean, there were only four horses in that race, I think.
Four or five. It was really odd.
And the article I read about it, I think Brad Cox said that also, just, you know, I mean, that short field like that.
Yeah.
But the Haskell's up next, what, the mid-July, late July?
No, it's late July. Might even be the 1st of August. It's no, I think it is the end of July, yeah.
Because they moved to Saratoga
6 weeks
in August, early August.
Yeah. No, July. There is, Saratoga opens July now. Yeah.
I've only been up there in August. Oh, no, it's... Hey, that's a beautiful place.
Yep. So that's our horse racing report for the day.
Well, let's move on to the NBA. And I sent you the – no, I didn't send you – about the jump jump shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to draw a foul.
Yeah, I think that's terrific. The unfortunate thing is, Mike, is this is another thing that's going to be up to the interpretation of the referee. And I think the more you give the officials, the less competent they become. But I think that the NBA definitely needs to clean this up, because now you see guys go up. And, you know, they changed the rule years ago about kicking out your leg. If you kick out your leg, it's an offensive foul. That's not a foul on the defense.
But rightly so.
Yeah, absolutely. But now guys are, you know, they fake the shot. And if the defender goes up, you know, they jump right in his chest and throw the ball at the rim to get two free throws. So,
or three if you're beyond the arc.
Exactly. So they need to clean that up. But I, you know, again, it's going to be up to the interpretation of the official.
Supposedly, they have addressed it, and they're passing it forward to the board of whoever in the league, and that has to pass there.
Yeah. The competition committee. I was on the very first competition committee. Commissioner Stern formed this committee, and we looked at a couple of rules. One was we changed from 8 seconds to 10 seconds, from 10 seconds to 8 seconds to get over the half court line, and we changed the ruling on zone defenses, your ability to kind of play
a little bit of a zone.
So I was on the very first competition committee. They didn't even call it that. I think it was just a bunch of guys. They flew to New York to look at some of the rules. But now they have a competition committee. But that committee can only make recommendations. It has to go to the board of governors, the owners, to be any.
I think that's where it's headed. I think they've done the competition committee.
Yeah.
I think it's headed to the owners. The question is, and we're going to look at this a little closer, because does it go into effect for the last playoff games this year, or do you think they'll just defer it
to next year? No, they won't change it. They can't change it now during, especially after the playoffs.
But it's so ugly out there with that particular play, you know. At 10:30, we're going to have John Hampton, SEC referee from Cynthiana, lives in Lexington, played a little baseball. He's going to call us on the Kim Crawford Wines Celebrity Call-In Line. That's what it is, Kim Crawford Wines Celebrity. Bingo, 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 right?
You got it.
Yeah. But we'll talk a little about refereeing in the college arena, not the professional arena. But what I've noticed, and I think I've read too, Dan, see what you think. One of the reasons they're taking that unnatural jump shot that they're looking at is, and that's what they called it, unnatural
shooting motion, I think.
Yes. The players, all they're doing is bitching. I mean, players used to bitch, but not every play. I mean, you know, people are tired of that. Just play. I mean, am I missing something? I'm not the only one. I've read about people complaining about it.
Yeah. No, every call draws some reaction from a player. And Trey Young last night got a technical. He looked at the official and he took his thumb and his forefinger on each eye and opened his eyes, like, telling the official. And he got a technical real quick for doing that. But no, I think you're right. It's every play. And, like you said, it's always been a part of the game.
Absolutely.
But not every call. I mean, every call can't be wrong. They got to get some right.
It breaks the flow of the game also. And I think sometimes it all the complaining on one side hurts that team, where all the majority of the bitching happens. But as a fan, Dan, it just breaks the flow of the game, does it not?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, these guys are human beings.
Sure.
I mean, they have feelings. They have biases. And I had an official, and it got so bad the relationship between us when I was a coach. I knew it when I saw him walk out on the floor. I knew I was getting at least one technical, maybe two.
How much were technicals then? A couple hundred?
No, they were more than that.
Really?
Yeah, like 1,000 or
1,500. Oh, you got to be careful.
I do know it was 2,500 if he got kicked out of the game. I don't remember exactly what one technical was, but if he got kicked out, it was 2,500.
For player and coach or coach?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. And so what happened was the league, I mean, our relationship deteriorated to the point that the league set up a meeting between him and me. It was in Los Angeles. We had just had a shoot around, and we had a meeting, and I had my assistant general manager there, and I think the official had somebody from the officials union, and we had a really good discussion. I told him that I thought he was biased and that I was getting bad calls, and he told me he didn't think so, and our relationship it got better. It got better. I don't think it affected his officiating on our team or my approach to him, but the relationship got better. But it can become a real problem.
Did you ever have a official tell you that he missed a call?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not any of the young guys. The young guys never. I mean, they never miss a call. You know, but some of the veterans. Yeah. You know, especially when I was playing, and you had those great officials
that had been refereeing for years.
Earl Strom. I remember Earl Strom going in the stands. It was my rookie year with the Colonels, and the ABA had just raided the officials from the NBA.
That's right, they did.
They went and got four of the best NBA officials and brought them over.
One was Earl Strom.
And one was Earl Strom. Joe Gashue. Norm Drucker. And the redheaded guy, Jess. Anyway.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Anyway,
I can see him now.
And Strom went in the stands. We were playing our rookie year. We played some games down at the Convention Center. It was the Armory back then, I think, and Summit Freedom Hall. And then our second year we played, when Artis was a rookie, we played all of our games in Freedom Hall. But we were down at the Armory. And he went in the stands after some guy one time. But those officials, I mean, if they kicked one, they'd say, you know, and you have no response. If the official says, I might have missed that one, you know, I think you did. And that's the end of it. But some of these young guys now, they never miss a call. They get them all right.
And I agree with you. And I think in college, you're probably less likely to have somebody tell you I missed a call. I had one official in all the years that I coached that said to me, like, I missed it. I'm sorry I missed it. It was Don Rutledge, who was one of the best referees.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then became he managed referees as far as for different leagues. And Don was, he was good. And he blew this one, and it cost my best player a foul and put Georgia State. We're playing Georgia State. They were in the original Sun Belt Conference. We might have been playing UAB. I can't remember. Close game back and forth. And he totally missed it. Cost me a foul, which was number 4 on my best player. Lost a basket, and he knew he missed it right from the jump. So he runs by me, and he slows down. He said, I'm really sorry. He said, I missed that. He said, I'm sorry, and kept going. You know, he kind of – and that's the only time. The rest of them, they wouldn't speak to you, didn't want to talk about it. No.
What'd you say in response to him?
It shut my pie hole up.
Yeah. There is no response to that. You know, my family – Mike, I'm so happy, has my back. I just got a text from Scott that said, Kersey.
Just Kersey. Thank you, Hoser.
I appreciate you helping out.
Just Kersey. That's right. I can see him. I can see him right now.
No.
I couldn't come with the second part, but those guys were quality referees.
They were the best. Yeah. They were the best. They could control, not control the outcome, but they
control the flow.
Yeah. And and they would they rarely missed a call, but there was no, you know, come back to them. I mean, they were in control. They never let a game get out of hand. So
when you debated with a referee, I know when I debated with a referee, did you ever get pushback? A lot of lip service?
Oh yeah,
really?
Yeah,
I like those referees, and I will be honest with you, most of the referees, they acted like they heard you, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And I had very few conversations. They just kept running up and down the floor. You know, I mean, really. And I know some guys have. I've talked to guys. So, oh, yeah, he'll talk to me. Not just talk. When somebody's at the charity stripe and you just kind of want to bend his ear a little bit, you know, stroke the referee. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a rebuttal to your complaint.
Right. Now, probably not a rebuttal, but, you know, telling me I was wrong. They didn't have any problem telling me that I had the wrong opinion. But it's a difficult job,
and
I think it gets harder all the time with the size and the quickness of the players today. I think and like we just talked about, putting more on their plate. You know, like, what is that, an unnatural shooting motion when a guy jumps in? I mean, you keep putting more on their plate. It's tough.
Well, if they've got a fourth referee sitting on the sideline, correct? In case somebody gets hurt,
yeah,
and they have a sub. At least they do in college.
Well, in the NBA, they don't have them sitting on the sideline, but there's usually, I know in Denver, we had a guy that was at every game, but sitting in the stands. But he was a qualified NBA official, and if something would have happened, you know, he could have gone and gotten dressed. They don't have the fourth official at the site
or in the locker room.
No.
It is a tough job. Of course, these guys working in the NBA, it's a pretty good job.
Yeah.
You can get it.
Yeah.
Monetarily.
First class travel. There was an official a few years ago that got in trouble because he was selling his first class ticket and flying coach.
Mike up in Cincinnati. I'll come with his name too. I can see him now. I played in his fundraiser up there. He had a foundation.
Mike,
he got busted.
Now he was another great official.
Oh, he was funny.
He would give it back to you and laugh at you. But Mike Mathis. Yeah, Mike Mathis. Very good, Michael.
Yeah.
He was a terrific official. But is that who got caught selling his first class
ticket?
Yeah,
I think so. There might have been another one or
and
two.
Flying coach. But they have, you know, fulls. Most of the officials that I ever saw drove up to the arena in a big old Cadillac. So, you know, and they stay at five-star hotels.
That's a good gig.
Yeah. Now, they don't have charters. They still have to fly commercials. So they're not getting out the night of a game. They're going to the airport in the morning. But the pay is really good. Most NBA officials, I know it's different in the NFL. Most NFL officials have other jobs because they only work on the weekends. But for the NBA officials, and I'm guessing hockey and baseball, it's a full-time gig.
It certainly is, and they have camps. People conduct camps to help these referees develop their game, and then they report back. And everybody's got a list of up-and-coming officials.
Mm-hmm.
And then in college, each league tries to get most of those. And then the NCAA selects. They've got a commissioner of officials. We'll have to ask Johnny Hampton about that. And I think he's out of Philly. He's a former referee that he actually grades and follows all these officials,
mm-hmm.
or used to, and for the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, you enter the NCAA tournament, let's say 50 referees, all right? And I just pulled that number. That's through the math on the games. They, based upon how they're graded, they move from game to game.
Yeah, yeah. You know, all of the NBA officials are graded on every game. I mean, they look at tapes after every game. The head of the officials and his crew in New York are grading them and telling him, cutting up film and telling him, watch this play, watch that play. So, you know, they just don't show up and officiate and go home. I mean, there's a learning curve and a grading process that goes along with it.
Well, I'd hope so, considering, you know, they are officiating the highest level of the sport, that they would be actively trying to get better and correct mistakes and stuff like that.
Well, they do that in college too, yeah. Green. You know, they'll have...
I feel like people just don't realize that they actually do that.
Well, no, I agree with you. I think it's a much harder job than people, you know, there's the human factor. I mean, it's a hard job, but they're trying to do better at the NBA level, college, by training these guys, yeah, and watching the tape. So what can you ask for?
Have you ever read the story about Tim Donaher?
I read the book. He put a book out.
Yeah. That's an amazing.
Did you know him?
I thought he was a great official, so he must have been betting on me, because I thought I got pretty good calls. But if you haven't read the story, look it up. It's an official. I guess it's been, what, 10, 15 years ago now, and he got caught up with some gamblers and got caught making calls that, you know, and the interesting part about all of that story is that it only took like 5 or 6 calls. Now, you know, they weren't so much winning and losing.
Covering.
Exactly. Covering the spread. And he, it's an amazing story how he got hooked on that and how he got drug in and how much money he made. I mean, his ex-wife said she'd find, you know, jackets with wads of cash in the pockets. Amazing story.
Yeah, and I guess he's barred from officiating ever.
Oh, yeah.
But I've seen him. They've had him on a show or two someplace along the line. And I read that book he wrote about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they just hooked him big time.
Oh, and just started out, you know, like a lot of things do, just started out with a little bit and calling him asking his opinion on games. And it went from there to actually, you know, affecting the outcome of games with his officiating.
And second hour, or after we have John Hampton on, we might talk a little bit about what's going on in Dallas. I sent you an article about
that.
I think that's an interesting article for the Dallas Mavericks. One of your favorite guys,
Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban. He has to be the NBA front office least favorite
nightmare.
Owner.
He's a nightmare for
owner in the. I mean, he's the most visible. He sits at the end of the bench, whole man road, when he's not taping Shark Tank.
In a T-shirt.
And exactly, and is the most vocal on the officiating. I don't know how many millions of dollars, and it is millions of dollars, he's paid over the years in fines for his comments about the officiating. And the people he hires, which is the story that you sent me, the NBA office has to shudder every time they hear a Mark Cuban story.
And I got that from The Athletic. I subscribe to The Athletic. Great online newspaper. And I saw that, and I thought you'd get a kick out of it.
Yeah, no, that was good. I appreciate that. We got to take a break. You're listening to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel. Compliments of Stockton Mortgage.
You're locked on Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back to Sports Talk, presented by Stockton Mortgage. Dan Issel, Mike Pratt. And we're very pleased, a gentleman to take time off from his, I believe he got married last weekend, and now he's vacationing, Dan, and he's calling in on the Kim Crawford Wine Celebrity Hotline. John Hampton, welcome in.
Thank you very much, my old friend. It's great to hear your voice in the summertime.
Well, how's Florida? Where are you in Florida?
I am in Naples, Florida, ooh, with my lovely wife, and it is raining like crazy.
Man.
Well, John, we really appreciate it. I don't think I would have taken time off of my honeymoon to talk to me and Mike, so we really we really appreciate your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It really is. I love Mr. Pratt from way back, and he's a good friend. So when he reached out, I certainly looked forward to talking to you guys.
John's a former UK baseball player. It comes from the refereeing family, Dan Issel. His dad was a referee. His brother Brent and John all are big-time referees, mm-hmm, NCAA quality referees. And now that's, you know, you talk about basketball trees, man. That's a referee
from
tree.
Cynthiana, Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's what we wanted to talk to you about, John, is how was, first of all, refereeing without any crowd this year? That had to be a big adjustment because you get a feel for a crowd, too, when you're calling the game.
It was very weird. It was, very much fun. There was just no normal energy. So it was very, very different, as you know. And the things that are said in the normal course of battle, you know, that are just part of a game, now all of a sudden are heard very clearly from coaches, from players. Just your normal interaction with coaches and players now is very audible, where normally there is that crowd noise that keeps so much of that stuff just between you and the coach, you and the player. So it was very much a strange year, and hopefully this COVID thing is behind us, and we can get back to the normal crowds.
We spent most of our first half hour talking about officials and refereeing the game, and it would seem to me, and I don't know how you do it, it would seem to me that to keep your biases out of the call that you're making, how difficult is that?
Well, I tell you, it's not difficult at all because, Dan, we and most fans don't know this and don't have a reason to know it, but at our level, the level of scrutiny and accountability and accuracy on call selection and judgment is really unbelievable. It's perhaps not as big as the NBA, but you wouldn't believe how we are graded. And so you really have to be accurate in your call selection. And so, you know, a bias just doesn't really is not hard, I don't think, for people at our level to, I don't think there is any bias. It's more crew chemistry, so that, as you know, as a former player and coach, both of you guys, that level of consistency becomes apparent and everybody just sort of relaxes and coaches and plays, versus the one thing that certainly will get a coach going is the appearance or the feeling of the game being one way on one end and a different game on the other. So that's truly the key as you progress in this business, is having that instinct and that feel. And largely it comes with experience, as you know, in so many things, experience is very critical. But being able to have that chemistry as a crew, all three of you, so that those coaches and players just kind of relax and do their thing and play and coach and really let us work.
Well, John, that's an excellent point. You talk about a crew, but the crews rotate, correct? You don't always have the same guys. You may have one partner back-to-back, but it's not a let's move this crew through this part of the schedule together.
That is very true. We are independent contractors. I mean, we're associated with conferences and leagues, but we travel individually and meet our partners at the arenas, you know, or the hotel and ride together. That's another thing, Mike, that was very interesting about COVID. You know, a big part of our fraternity is hanging out and getting to be friends with each other and families, and that whole basketball officiating fraternity is very special. But last year in COVID, you know, we had to basically travel to the arena by ourselves and meet at the arena. In many places, showers weren't available, so you came dressed. You refereed the game, you got in your car by yourself, and you went back to your hotel or wherever you were going. So that was very different, and, you know, it made it more difficult to get together and talk about the game that we're getting ready to work and all of those things that are normal to our work. But we are independent contractors. We don't referee as a crew like, say, football does. And so, yeah, that's your point is well taken, in that it is hard to sometimes do that. And you see that more when crews come in from different parts, maybe different parts of the country, different leagues. You know, they talk about the SEC being an athletic, physical league. They talk about how physical the Big Ten is and the Big East, the old Big East, you know, how physical that league is and was, and then some other leagues are known more for finesse and maybe not as physical. So getting that crew, those three referees, the crew chief and the two referees, to see the same game and be on the same page is truly our biggest challenge.
John, I love the college game. I think on so many different levels, the college game is more watchable than NBA. The one exception has to be the block charge call. And I don't see nearly the block charge call come into play as much in the NBA as I do the college game. And I think and I'd love your opinion, I think the reason is because you hardly ever get a blocking call in the NBA, and it seems like there's a dozen a game in the college game. How difficult is it to call that particular play?
It is very challenging. They're very hard. They certainly are, but what we're taught really early on, Dan, is to find the defense, to referee the defense. So as a referee, you're not watching the offensive player, the ball handler. You have to have that in your periphery. But we are taught to find the defense, referee the defense. If you do that, you don't get surprised. So that is our basic fundamental on block charge. Yes, they're very difficult. These guys are so fast and so athletic that all of a sudden you've got a collision and bodies on the floor and you're processing. And if you didn't find the defense, then now you're really processing. You know, when I came up, you'll get a kick out of this, 30 years ago, one of the things the old timers, guys that you guys know, that Mr. Pratt and I call friends from Lexington, my mentors, a 50-50 block charge went to the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very, it was certainly an unofficial, unwritten referee thing, but the 50-50 block charge, the guy takes that collision in the chest. It's close. It is 50-50. It could go either way. You reward the defense. Now, that's not part of the modern game, but it's tough. You just can't get surprised. You have to find that defense, referee the defense, and then be patient, see the whole play, let it start, develop, finish. And when you do that, It's not as hard as it sometimes looks on TV. And then when you slow these plays down and in the world of technology that we're in and you stop these plays and you go frame by frame and you look at it, and even there it's like, wait a minute, is this legal or is this not legal?
Mm-hmm.
They are really challenging at times, but truly when you have that basic fundamental on finding the defense and refereeing the defense, it's really, Dan, not as hard as it probably looks.
Well, John, I know referees don't change the rules. Coaches and ADs and all that stuff, they pass it down to you guys. But if you were able to change something that would help you referee better, well, what would it be? Would it be expanding the block charge arc, maybe expanding the lane? Maybe how about this one? If you had, like tennis does, Cyclops, okay, to see if the foot's on the line or not on the line. And if you had a Cyclops at every foul line extended to or somewhere in there where you could tell the three-pointer, would any of those really help you, or what would help you?
Mike, that's a great question. I don't know. You know, there's always – there's so much congestion in there. I don't know about lengthening the lane to the international lane. But the congestion and all of that is certainly different and difficult. As I've been around 30 years, and every year we're always talking about cleaning up the rough play in the post. Every year. And it's like, is that ever going to change? You know, is that ever really going to change, cleaning up the paint, the physical play in the post? I don't know, Mike. I don't know. I'm not sure what that would be. The you know, the arc, the NBA arc is interesting. And Dan talked about this a little earlier. That was put in, I think, historically in the professional game to keep these guys from standing there and taking charges and having injury. And having that help defender, that secondary defender, come over and take a charge on a Michael Jordan, on a $1 million athlete that's going to the rim. Either block the shot or contest the shot or get out of the way. We're not having these collisions like are so prevalent in the high school and college game. But finding the arc, now think about this, Mike. I know you're a super fan of referees because I've heard your comments some nights. Think about this, and I've been on the road with you. I've been to the Bahamas with you.
That's right.
I know how your mind thinks. But think about this: when you're a referee and you've got these great athletes, and they're so talented physically and athletically, and they're going to the rim. And you're refereeing and you're finding the defense, which I talked about is a primary fundamental. You're finding the defense. And now all of a sudden, hold on. I got to find the arc. I got to find the feet. Now I got to find the arc, the feet. Now I got to still referee the principles of block charge. So that is a lot, man. That is a whole lot. So, you know, I don't know what the answer is to your question about what would help us. You know, and Dan was talking about block charge. Truly, the hardest things that come to us, to me personally, and I think my colleagues in the referee business would echo this, the hardest plays are out of bounds. You're refereeing two guys locked in, and you're refereeing all of this, and you're focused, and then, boom, the ball goes out of bounds. And you're like, you don't know. You don't know. That sometimes is harder for us and more surprising to us than the, you know, the block charge that obviously you're focused on. Everybody's watching that. So I really don't know what would make our game easier or better from our standpoint. I've never seen in my 30 years, Mike, the rule book having so few changes as we have this year entering 21-22 season. There's There's literally hardly anything major in there. It's all administrative, housekeeping type cleanup rules. And in my you know, 25 plus years of Division I basketball, I've never seen so few changes in the rule book.
I would think that would be a good thing for the officials and for the teams.
I think so, Dan. I mean, yeah, I think that says that the powers that be were pretty, I guess, happy with where we are. I know that there were a lot of suggestions and potential changes that didn't make it through the committee and then the oversight committee. One pertained to flopping. That got a lot of attention, and then it kind of got shelved, and it went back to where we currently are with the rule as it applies to, you know, to flopping. So I would think so too, Dan. I think it says that we're in a pretty good place in terms of the game, but I'm sorry, I can't give a better answer on what would make our profession easier or better. I really don't know. I think there's always going to just be those things that are part of our game about consistency and rough post play and block charge and makeup calls and all those things that are just inherent in our wonderful game of basketball. I think they're going to always be a part of it, regardless of what the rules are.
Yeah, I don't think you ever want to take the human factor out of it. I think that's part of the game. John, my last question is, I would be interested in the logistics. Who makes your schedule? How soon do you know where you're going to be officiating? Do you make your own travel arrangements? How is that all handled?
Yes, we do. And going back, yes, sir, to answer your question, I do all of that. And all of my colleagues in the basketball business are the same. I do everything. And from Lexington, you know, Dan, that sounds like a lot, but in my personal world, it's not that hard. I'm pretty much on Delta. I'm pretty much in a Marriott, and I'm in a national rental car. So, but for some guys that are coming out of more metropolitan major areas, major airports, you know, they bounce around on different airlines and hotels and. But we do that. Yes, we are 1099 independent contractors contracted with each individual league. And you're responsible for getting there and getting there on time, obviously, and booking all of your, you know, all of your travel.
What, one last.
And to answer the latter part of your question, you normally you're starting to get your games in September. Throughout September, the coordinators of each league are starting to get their schedules. So the coordinator that the referee deals with directly is getting the schedules from the schools, putting it together, starting to give his referees their dates. So basically how it works is you take a league, say for myself, the Southeastern Conference is my primary league. So I'm working with the coordinator of officials in the SEC. He gives me those dates. I put them in my calendar, and then I would go to another relationship that I have in the Big 12 and say, hey, these are my block dates with the SEC. This is what I have available. And then that coordinator will take what dates that he would like to use you, and then you just kind of go on from there trying to complete your schedule. But normally September-ish is when you know when they're handing out games and dates and assignments, and it's a work in progress, and it certainly takes a lot of work to, you know, put all that together, because oftentimes you're dealing with, you know, a lot of different coordinators.
Well, John Hampton, we appreciate your time, considering your situation down there. Naples, with the rain, you can't play golf. Okay, so you've got to take your bride to lunch, man.
Correct. Yes, that is we're going to get a walk in and then have a good lunch.
There you go. Okay.
John, we really appreciate your time. We hope you'll come back often.
I would love to. It's great talking to both of you guys. Just let me know, Mike, whenever you want to chat.
Thanks, John. How about that?
Yeah, that was very interesting. I enjoyed that conversation. September seems awful late to me. I mean, they start playing the games the end of October, 1st of November.
1st of November, yeah.
I would think they'd have their schedule coordinated.
Well, the SEC's always late in announcing or releasing their schedule. And the teams can't release before the SEC releases. That's part of the deal, okay?
Okay.
So,
right.
And they're always late. I mean, I remember many conversations that I had with Dwayne Peavy, and you know, he worked his buns off to fill that schedule out. Scheduling's a bear. And he had to wait before he would release the schedule until the SEC released it. So, you know, maybe the referees are caught up in all of that.
Right.
Of course, 2 months before the opener, you got plenty of time to make your reservations.
I find it interesting how in basketball, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, schedule gets released a couple months before the season. Football, we got to know it 15 years ahead of time. Whereas you would think, not saying that you need to schedule a basketball game a decade in advance, but because there's so many more basketball games, you would think that there would be a little bit more what's the word I'm looking for? Or aggressive and making sure they have dates and stuff figured out ahead of time than what they do with football, when it's like, oh, there's just 12 games, they're always playing on Saturdays, we can figure that out, right?
That's right. I mean, we're going to put you in with the commissioner on that one, Crean. Like so many of my friends, you may be searching for your dream home, but be sure to get the best mortgage for that home. The folks at Stockton Mortgage are the best at helping people find a complete financing option that works for them. So don't wait. Get started with our favorite home loan folks at Stockton.com. That's Stockton.com. NMLS.
Attaboy!
How about that? 8259. Equal housing lender. It only took me, what, 2 weeks to get that one down, Pat? So we love our folks at Stockton Mortgage.
And we appreciate them being so patient because we messed that. I think we do a good job on everything except the MLS.
Oh, I'm laughing. I got pain in my back and my side, and I'm laughing. You made me laugh. But we got it. We got it covered, and Crean's got us covered, so we're going to take a break. And next hour, we're going to entertain a call to the man who followed you at the center position at Kentucky, Big Jim Andrews.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
We'll be back. This is Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, ESPN Louisville, 680-1057.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.